Her name was Jane, and she worked a ranch up in the Green Springs mountain area above our valley. She had rights to bring her horses down to the 100-acre meadow for fresh grass, water, and to stimulate their minds and hearts. Jane called herself a horse shrink, a therapist for horses. She took in abandoned and abused animals, brought them back to their natural selves, and then sold them to caring owners. We stood in the shade of the black oaks as Jane told us about her work. Sometimes I get horses who have spent their whole lives in darkness, eating from an oat bucket, drinking from a trough. They've never seen the world, never had fresh water from a creek, or eaten grass in a field, or had space to run in the open. When I'm given one of these horses, I bring it down here to this meadow for a week or so. I set up a camping trailer and just let it go free. What happens? I asked. Well, the first day and night, it stays next to my trailer, whining for oats and water. Here it has over 100 acres of green grass, and it stares at me like it's starving, begging for food. Do you feed it? No. I walk it to the creek or take it out to the middle of the meadow, and still it whines and begs. Sometimes it stands in the creek with water running over its hooves, crying with thirst. It is so routinized to buckets and troughs that it doesn't recognize anything, even when its nose smells water. And then, out of sheer desperation, the horse will bow its head and brush its lips along the creek and stick out its tongue and then suddenly drink and toss its head and whinny with happiness. And a day later, because it's half-starved, it will reach down into the meadow and tear up a clump of grass and eat. Then all of a sudden it knows, I am surrounded by food. Jane laughed. What happens when the realization hits? I wondered. It runs. The horse will take off and gallop and kick and run. That's the moment I love most. That's why I do this work. To see that moment when a creature realizes it's free within a big, beautiful world. That's pure joy. Mark Iaconelli shares this story in his book, The Gift of Hard Things, Finding Grace in Unexpected Places. Mark identifies this story as a parable of his life. The horse's experience was all too familiar, he writes. The safe, restricted, unending life of routine and predictability. The unexpected and unwanted disruption and accompanying fear. The overwhelming despair and grief at the loss of the familiar. The fixating on the past. The distress that blinds one to surrounding possibilities. The shock of joy when you realize that beneath the suffering lies verdant fields of life and freedom. Like Mark, I heard my life in this story. Like so many white, middle-class Western men, I believe the illusion that I have some control over my life. Get a good education, stay out of trouble, avoid risky behavior, take responsibility for my actions, make wise choices, and my life can be lived more or less as I choose. Even when the storms of life arise, I believe mistakenly, I'm better prepared to navigate them, having made right and responsible choices. When we've spent our lives living this illusion, like a horse in a stall satisfied with our ration of oats and quenching our thirst in the stagnant waters of a trough. It's hard to believe life could be different, even better. But this life, thinking we are in control, is a life of fear. Denying disappointment and doubt, circumventing change, evading chaos and confusion, avoiding conflict and suffering, rather than seeing the gift of freedom in our failures and beauty in our brokenness. We trade authenticity for the illusion of control, joy for a false sense of security. We smell the water, we see the grass, maybe even begin to run. But wonder, joy, gratitude, humility, compassion, freedom, and love are elusive. We see the storm clouds on the horizon. Our lives begin to unravel. Suffering turns to despair. Trauma takes away our courage. Abuse steals our dignity. Guilt and shame rob us of our self-worth. Our friends turn against us. Love turns to loathing. Dreams die. Beloved, we are not in control. Our only hope is the love of God. A love that can never be controlled. A love that can only be received by God's grace through a radical trust. The audacious hope that God is who God promises to be. Desperate people do desperate things. Having crossed the Sea of Galilee to share the good news of God's love with the Gentiles, Jesus has come home. Before he's even out of the boat, a great crowd gathers by the sea. The people are desperate. They're pressing in on Jesus from all sides. Engulfed by their desperation, Jesus meets Jairus. Can you imagine? Jairus is a powerful man, left powerless by his little girl's illness. A leader in the synagogue, wealthy and influential, Jairus is held in high esteem by his people. When Jairus sees Jesus, he falls at his feet and begs Jesus repeatedly, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so she may be made well." Jairus relinquishes his power. Jairus humbles himself, entrusting his daughter's life to Jesus. As Jesus walks with Jairus, engulfed in the despair of the moment, the crowd presses closer and closer. From out of nowhere, a woman who shares Jairus' desperation reaches out her trembling hand and touches Jesus. She shares Jairus' desperation, but not his position, power, or privilege. Jesus is her last hope. She spent all she had on doctors who couldn't help her. She is a woman of sorrows, acquainted with grief. No one even knows her name. All we know is she bled uncontrollably, off and on, for 12 years, the age of Jairus' daughter. That's all we need to know. Can you imagine? Separated from her faith community, estranged from her family and friends by her condition, She has no one to love and little reason to live. No one can help her. Out of her desperation, she turns to Jesus. If I but touch his clothes, I will be made well. Desperate people, living desperate lives. Jairus and this unnamed woman couldn't have come from two more different worlds. Jairus, the center of his. She lived on the fringe of hers. Jairus, the master of his. We don't even know her name. Their lives couldn't be more different. Yet in their desperation and their faith, in their radical trust and audacious hope, they are sister and brother. Jairus says, "Come, touch my daughter so she may be made well." The woman says, "If I but touch his clothes, I will be made well." She reaches out her hand to touch the fringe of Jesus' garment. Jesus reaches out to take Jairus' daughter by the hand. Whether touching Jesus or being touched by him, Jesus is the source of healing. Humble faith, radical trust, audacious hope, reaching out to divine love. Divine love embracing our desperate lives. In a moment, we know we are healed. We know we are loved. Jesus speaks to their desperation. "Daughter, your faith has made you well." To Jairus, "Do not fear, only believe." Their healing comes by grace through faith. Jairus and this woman believe Christ is who God says he is. Their radical trust and audacious hope, their faith makes them well. Desperate people do desperate things. At their wits' end, having exhausted all their options, Jairus and this unnamed woman cry out to God. With their radical trust, born of their faith and desperation, they turn to Jesus with an audacious hope when they have little reason to hope that somehow, some way, Jesus will help. And he does. In Lamentations, a little book of poems expressing the grief of God's people when the Babylonian armies of King Nebuchadnezzar destroy Jerusalem. In Lamentations, we hear, "The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore I will hope in him." Who sings such a song after their city is destroyed? And their brightest and best, their family and friends, are taken to a foreign land. Beloved, I marvel at people who, having lost everything, can still sing the goodness of God. People whose bodies are consumed by cancer. People tormented by an unrelenting addiction. People left homeless by circumstances beyond their control. People ravaged by poverty. People grieving the death of a child or grandchild. People who praise the creative power of God as the storms of life rage all around. People like Jairus and this unnamed woman who hold fast to the promises of God. Theirs is a radical trust, an audacious hope, born in desperation by grace through faith. As rescuers respond to the devastation in Surfside, Florida, our nation watches in desperation. Hoping against hope, they will find one more person alive as they dig through the rubble. The weight of the emotional trauma on family and friends, rescue workers, even strangers all across the country seems even heavier than the rubble. There have been many miracles, but not enough. So many questions, so much courage, so much grief, so few answers. Some will turn to God. Many, understandably, will not. As I watched this tragedy unfold from a distance, I thought of Jesus' teaching about the Tower of Siloam, where 18 people were killed when the tower fell. Jesus doesn't offer explanations for their suffering. In fact, he challenges the conventional wisdom that they were somehow responsible for their suffering. Beloved, if Jesus offers no answers for our suffering, I would be foolish to try. What Jesus does offer, as one who suffered greatly, is a witness. A witness of faith offered by Jairus, this unnamed woman, and countless others. Some even with us this morning. They offer a witness that even in times such as these, when suffering is great and answers are few, God may be trusted. God is who God promises to be. God's love for us and all creation is steadfast. The day will come when justice and peace abound, and mourning and crying and pain will be no more. Beloved, even in times of chaos and suffering, may God grant us the humble faith, radical trust, and audacious hope to see the steadfast love of God that surrounds us, to see the steadfast love of God that surrounds us, that we might be made well. Thanks be to God.